can look for book clubs. You can look for girls interested in sci-fi. It depends, but you'll have a niche, and there'll be a community of people that are interested in that. And you have to be really bullish about digging in there and being part of that community. You know, I always say that it can't be always about pushing and promoting. It also has to be about like pulling and loving other people's work as well. So the more you kind of can promote work that's similar to the work that you're writing or publishing, that's good work too. Yeah, I think it's just really about being in the community a lot more, out with the readers.
That's Angela Bull, the Chief Executive Officer of IBPA, talking about independent publishing. Now, as you may know, IBPA is the owner of this broadcast, so it's great that she's here today to show us who's boss. We'll hear a lot more from Angela in just a couple minutes. But first, let me welcome you again to Inside Independent Publishing. I'm an independent publisher, and I'm your host, Peter Goodman. What is IBPA, you ask? IBPA is the Independent Book Publishers Association, and its mission is to lead and serve the independent publishing community through advocacy, through education, and also through tools for success. For more about IBPA and how it can help you be a better publisher and sell more books, whatever kind of publisher you are, go to ibpa-online.org. And now it's question time. Today, as we've mentioned, we're talking with Angela Bull, who is CEO of IBPA. But first, Caitlin Walker in the IBPA office is going to help us answer some questions from publishers. Hi, Caitlin. What's in the question bag today?
Hi, Peter. We've got a couple of them for you. Our first question comes from B. Johnson of Sage Creek Press. And so they write, I want to submit my newly published book to a handful of magazines in my niche, The Sport of Fly Fishing, but I'm unsure how best to approach the magazine. Should I contact the editor, or is this something that should be pursued through the magazine's advertising staff? I would love to hear what approach others have used and how successful they have been. So that's a really great question, and we do have a few answers. The first answer is from E. Parekh from Dramatic Ellipses. They write, from my experience working for a B2B magazine, I would think you are definitely better off contacting the editorial staff. Send the editor a note via the address in the colophon at the front of the magazine and explain you have a book about their subject. Give a very quick overview of the specific reasons their audience would like it and your credentials and ask if you may send them a review copy. You can also just skip this step and send a review copy with that info in the cover letter. But personally, I prefer to make contact first, since it's hard to tell how individual publications respond to unsolicited mail. You might also offer them an excerpt from your book to be printed in the magazine or pitch an article you think they'd like. The book info would then be included either as the source or in the author bio. Advertising is a whole different avenue. So we have a second answer from R. Fenn of Gira Di Mondo. And R. Fenn explains, the best thing is to get some reviews from independent sources first, then create a media release citing some of the professional reviews and blurbs from credible audience segments that are relevant to the publications in order to gain some credibility. Send an email with a cover letter and the media release citing the reasons this book would be of interest to their audience. Be sure to send it in PDF format and send it to the editorial staff of the publication that you have identified. Personalize it to each name as well. Then after 3 to 5 days, follow up with a phone pitch to the same people asking if they received it and explain that you hope they'll run it or perhaps provide a review of the book. Ask the editorial contact to connect you with advertising to get some price. If this is your main audience, you should consider paid advertising in those venues. Even if the print versions are too expensive, check if they have digital advertising to reach your primary audience.
I guess one of the big takeaways from that is don't just send your book out without a lot of research in advance, and don't send it out without following up. It takes a lot of work, even just for getting a review in a single venue, which is why I guess people hire professional publishers to do this. It's really a lot of work to pitch your book.
Yeah, I just want to add onto RFN's answer. I definitely agree about trying to get an actual contact, an individual who you can speak to. If that is possible, sometimes it's not. But when you have a real person that you can start looking into your options, getting information from, it can really, really help personalize you as an author and really get your book out.
So, Caitlin, are there other questions today?
Yeah, we have one final question. This is about copyrights, and it comes from Jay Waters. Jay Waters asks, I have a mom who wants her 12-year-old's book published. He's a great writer, but has written a story using all the Star Wars characters, the universe, etc. I have suggested he change all the names. Would that be enough? And our answer comes from M. Almond of Zion Publishing House. And they explain, you need the help of a lawyer. He certainly can't use the characters' names since they are protected by copyright, but I'm not sure about the other similarities to the actual Star Wars brand that may be included in his book and prohibited based on certain protections.
Yeah, this is a pretty murky area. There's a lot of fan fiction, people taking famous characters and redoing them. And generally, you get the feeling that most of the studios and publishers let this stuff go by as long as it's not interfering with their commercial value. But as soon as you try and turn it into something that has some financial value, you're likely to have George Lucas's or Disney's lawyer turn up at your door waving a lightsaber in your direction. So you got to be careful. So watch out for that. Thanks, Caitlin.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Great. Thanks to you and IBPA for all the great advice. If you have any questions for me or anyone at IBPA, just contact us on the IBPA website, ibpa-online.org, or message us on Twitter using the handle @IBPA. Be sure to put the word podcast in the message so your question gets to the right place. Today, we're talking with Angela Bowl. Thank you very much for being here, Angela. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be here.
Thank you all as well to you and to IBPA for making this podcast possible. It's a wonderful opportunity for members and non-members of IBPA to find out what's happening in the world of independent publishing today. So before we get started, let me just tell people a little bit about you. Angela Bowl is Chief Executive Officer of the Independent Book Publishers Association, a.k.a. IBPA, which is the largest book publishing association in the United States, serving independent publishers and self-published authors. Before joining IBPA, Angela served 2 years as Deputy Executive Director of the Book Industry Study Group, BISG, an organization that fosters conversation and consensus across all sectors of the book business. Before that, she served 2 years as BISG's Associate Director and 2 years as its marketing and communications manager. Angela holds a Master's of Science in Book Publishing from NYU and currently serves on the board of directors for the Book Industry Study Group. And the big news here is that in 2017, she was awarded the Book Industry Study Group's Industry Champion Award, which is given to an individual whose efforts have gone beyond the requirements of his or her position to advance the book industry. And that is very true of Angela Bowl, and I'm really happy that she has made some time to come and talk to us today. I've got a lot of questions about where independent publishing is going in America today, but before we get to those, maybe I could ask you, Angela, to tell us a little bit about IBPA, what the mission is, how large the organization is, and what you do there.
Yeah, sure. I'm always thrilled to talk about IBPA. Yeah, our mission is simply to lead and serve the independent publishing community through education, advocacy, and tools for success, which we kind of think of tools for success as programs that help level the playing field for independent publishers, be that discounts on products or access to advertising in Publishers Weekly or, you know, access to the big trade shows like Book Expo, Frankfurt Book Fair, American Library Association annual conference at a rate that's affordable for them. So we've been around since 1983. I certainly haven't been the executive director that long. I've been the executive director, CEO for the last 4 years, but the association has been around a long time before that. It kind of launched out of this idea that a group of California independent publishers had that it would be great if they could cooperate, I suppose, together. And they decided to try that for the first time at what was then the American Booksellers Association trade show, which is today Book Expo. They put all their books in a box and shipped their books out, maybe four or five different publishers to the show, and sent one representative to represent all of the books. And it really is kind of like the birth of cooperative marketing and cooperative advertising that started there. IBPA was born out of that one initiative, became a national association over time, and over time also really expanded its portfolio. So not just marketing programs anymore, IBPA became the place for education about professional publishing, what it means to be a publisher and how to do it correctly. There are all kinds of people coming into the publishing market, and we're here to show them, you know, the path, show them the way, show them how to do it correctly. So education has become a big focus for the association over the years. And so here we are.
Yeah, there you are. And you are in Southern California, Manhattan Beach.
Yeah.
Let me give the website before I forget. If anyone's listening and wants to find out about IBPA, make sure you go to ibpa-online.org, and you can check out the latest tweets if you go to Twitter. The handle is at IBPA. So like I say, you were in Manhattan Beach, Southern California, the epicenter of New York publishing then, as when IBPA got started in the 1980s, is in New York City. Do you think that being in Southern California, and that's about almost as far away from New York as you can get, has provided you kind of room to move outside of conventional boundaries and ways of thinking?
Absolutely. When I started this job, I'd lived in New York City. I'd been working in New York City publishing for 8 years, and I was pretty entrenched in that whole thing. I was one who thought there probably wasn't any publishing going on west of New Jersey. I didn't know about it anyway. I wasn't really familiar with it in my previous life. So, you know, when I moved to California to take this job and really started to get a sense of what's going on across the nation, it's vast and amazing. You know, I still have a pretty substantial T&E budget to get myself to New York probably every other month to, you know, as part of my job to be there and to advocate for our membership. So I have to go to meetings that are there, keep on the board of directors that I serve, and keep those conversations strong. There's all kinds of different things you can talk about related to independent publishing across the country.
And how big is IBPA now? How many members?
We have about around 3,000 members.
And that's been pretty steady over the years?
It has been, yeah. It's certainly been steady in my 4 years. I think there was this heyday before technology kind of popped up and everyone can kind of go online now and find information that they think is good enough, if you will. Before that, IBPA was a little bigger. We were up to about 4,000 members. But I'm talking like 20 years ago.
20 years ago,
before the internet came.
So in those 3,000 members, there are a lot of different types of publishers listening to this podcast, I hope. Maybe a lot of them are wondering, well, is IBPA something where I might fit in? What kind of publishers belong?
Well, any publisher who's interested in working professionally within the industry. So, you know, we really have to say that because we have publishers that are author publishers with one book to their name, a book that they wrote, but they are also the publisher of that book as well. And then larger publishers like Learner and Sourcebooks that are really working almost in what you would consider a more established traditional publisher space. But in both cases, you know, from that one-off book author publisher to the larger, more established indie presses, it's about putting out professional content and doing it well and understanding what publishing looks like today. We do a lot of education, so I think really if you're coming up and into the industry and you're going to learn a lot, you're going to get a great deal out of IBPA. We can really serve more established indies as well.
And it's not just publishers, that is to say people who have already published a book and are trying to figure out what to do with it, but in fact a lot of membership are publishers to be, I think what you call future publishers, people who are checking out the industry, trying to figure out what direction they should go in, publish themselves, work in a more traditional space. Is that right?
Yeah, we did that last year, actually. That was an initiative from our board of directors to expand our membership with a category for future publishers. You know, we think that's great if you're a student, for example. You know, I was a student at the NYU publishing program for a long time. I didn't know when I got out of that program if I was going to be a publisher or work for a publisher. It turned out I was going to work in trade associations. Tell you what, I didn't know trade associations existed back then. So this is completely different. But yeah, so if you're in that kind of exploratory phase, that's a great membership for you. And again, if you're not in school, but you're just trying to figure out whether this publishing is a profession that you're interested in, it's a good membership for you too.
So from your vantage point, first when you were studying at NYU, and then you went to BISG and you were there for quite a while. And of course, from its name, Book Industry Study Group, they know all about publishing, collecting data, figuring out trends and whatnot. And then here you are perched from a different vantage point. You've seen a lot of changes in the last 10 or 15 years. It's a big subject, but how would you explain to somebody what is going on in publishing today? What do you think are the big rivers of change that are appearing?
Publishing is not an industry that changes quickly or often or in wide sweeps, I suppose. It kind of moves pretty slowly. I found that out at BISG. It, you know, the margins have been about 3% for most publishing endeavors for the 10 years I've been in the industry. So in a way, there's not a lot that's really moved and shook up what's been traditionally going on in publishing. That's not to say that there aren't interesting things happening or new things happening. And some of it is just kind of happening on the sidelines. And it relates to what we were talking about before, which is all of the publishing west of New Jersey. That's always been there. This entire nation, everywhere around the nation, people have been publishing books. So it's not really as much a change as it is we're acknowledging it, where people are able to get content out now in ways that they weren't before. So, you know, I think, of course, Amazon coming up was a big change for us and brought a lot more author publishers into the mix, people who couldn't get through the gatekeepers at New York and wanted to publish their own books. But we can't say there was never self-publishing before Amazon came around. There was. It was just a lot harder to accomplish.
Self-publishing as a term was rather stigmatized up until the last couple of years. And in fact, I think some people still avoid it. They might refer to author publishing or their new categories of publisher who call themselves hybrid publishers that are somewhat similar to what used to be called vanity presses, in that they take money from authors to publish the books, but it's much more of an active, thoughtful, curated partnership than just a mere financial transaction. But nevertheless, would you say that the industry as a whole, the conventional industry, is still somewhat prejudiced against self-published books?
Yes. And I hesitate when I say that because I think it's not fair. Personally, I don't think that the business model used to publish books should matter. I think the professional presentation of a book was what matters. Really great content is what matters, and having diverse content available matters. But, you know, like I said, I hold enough meetings in New York City with folks. You're right. They don't want to talk about self-publishing. They think that it crowds the marketplace in a way that's unhelpful.
I mean, it takes money away from them.
I suppose is what that they could consider, but I don't really understand how. Books have never been in direct competition with each other. If I like aerospace, I'm going to buy every book on aerospace I can find. I'm not going to necessarily care about the publisher. I'm going to want content that's good. And at their level, you know, in the more traditional space, they have pretty much crowded access to bookstores and libraries, etc. So they're selling to consumers in that way. Why can't we all sell direct to consumer through online sources? I don't know that these books are in direct competition, and that's, they may think so, but I don't think it's really an issue. There's always been more books in the world to read than there's ever been time to read them. Self-publishing hasn't changed that.
You said earlier that publishing as an industry moves very, very slowly. Yet here we are in a world where the news cycle is 24/7. If something comes up on your feed, if you don't catch it in 5 minutes, it's replaced by something else. Can publishing today really afford to move as slowly as it does? You know, I'm an independent publisher myself, and we work with a distributor, and our distributor basically follows the schedules that are being dictated by the publishing industry as a whole. We have two seasons, and we have to announce our books 10 to 11 months in advance and get all the material up there. Meanwhile, everyone around us is moving at the speed of light, and we all sit around and complain. It's like, why is it taking us so long to get this information out there to people who want it? And we're constantly met with the same, well, it just takes that amount of time, as if that's a real explanation. I'm kind of worried that publishing is, I don't think it's going to disappear, but why is it so slow?
I think people believe that things take that much time to get done. I mean, editing the content, putting together the book, the design, the interior page design. They might have 20 other books that they're working on. They become very accustomed to this kind of this timeline. And that really is what I mean when I say the industry hasn't changed much. Those pre-pub and post-pub timelines, they don't change in that traditional space in the publishing industry. But I think when you talk about that, though, you know, it does point to why we have seen a lot of independent publishing pop up on the side, and authors who can put their books out faster are putting their books out faster, you know, using hybrid publishers maybe to do that, or doing it themselves with service providers. Doesn't have to take that much time, particularly if you don't have that many books in a list that you're working with, but you know, I suppose if you're putting a lot of content out, or you're trying to absorb a lot of content as a distributor, you need to put some brackets around it and try to kind of manage it in some way. And those timelines have helped.
I feel that some of those timelines are kind of dictated by the review media, because people feel that in order to get a book out there and have it sell from day one, they need to prime the pump, so to speak, and have a lot of reviews out there. And obviously people need time to prepare the reviews. Magazines work on long lead times for their schedules. So there are a lot of, I suppose, contributing factors that would slow things down.
It does remind me, too, another contributing factor was printing and print runs. And one reason to have a 6-month pre-pub deadline situation is, you know, you put the book out there, you start to alert the industry that it's available. Bookstores are told about it. They start pre-ordering the book to say, you know, I want 100 copies here and 600 copies here. And then in an offset print world, you get closer to your pub date and you can say, okay, I have orders of 6,000. So I'm going to print 8,000. You know, it's all about at that point, trying to get your print run right. So you don't overprint or underprint. You're trying to print to demand for the book, and that pre-work helps you do that, so you're not going out blind. It just becomes a moot point when you're dealing in a print-on-demand world, though. So that's kind of maybe a layover from old industry. And we're still working that cycle, even if a book is print-on-demand.
You know, these advances, they continue to go down because distribution and logistics of shipping, et cetera, have become so efficient that stores can basically wait until the last minute to order something and have the books delivered within 24 to 48 hours. So they are holding back a lot, unless it's a super lead title with a huge amount of money behind it. They are likely to restrict orders that maybe 10 years ago would have been 5 to 10 copies are now down to 1 or 2. Publishers can get caught short if there's a lot of demand because they're printing based on the advances, but the advances may be a lot lower than demand. A lot of these challenges that the marketplace presents to publishers seem to have forced a lot of publishers to just say, well, the hell with the bookstores, the hell with regular distribution. I'm just going to do everything on Amazon because Amazon gets everywhere. It'll take your book. They don't care who you are. On an Amazon page, your book, if you've got a good cover, looks as good as anyone else's. Do you think that's a mistake for authors to just say, well, screw it, I'm just going to go with Amazon?
I wouldn't categorize it as a mistake. There are realities to the world in which, you know, to the business as we work it. And in a lot of ways, these authors aren't going to get into the bookstores anyway. I mean, they just can't break through that. So I think that it's right for them to look for other channels. And not just author publishers, by the way, also micro presses, small regional presses, any kind of publisher that might have books that don't fit the mainstream kind of books that indie bookstores in particular look for because they don't have a lot of shelf space. You have to really understand how to work online consumer channels and how to sell through Amazon and how to, you know, really use metadata, which is also in the weeds. So we don't necessarily have to go way into that. But I think if you're an author publisher or someone anyway who's selling online exclusively or almost exclusively, really digging into an understanding of how you're using metadata is important.
Metadata, of course, is all the information about a book that is not the content. So it's like the title, the price, the ISBN, the size, the description, the keywords that enhance discoverability online, all that stuff. And it's become hugely important in the online world because it's the only way that people will ever find your book. And I will say that if you want to find out more about metadata and learn, check out what IBPA has to offer because there's quite a lot of discussion about metadata there. Let's assume like everyone knows about Amazon. What are some of the other things that a independent press, a small press, a micro press, an author publisher might be able to do to improve their chances for success? If they can't get into regular bookstores, what are some other things they might do?
Well, a lot of our members talk to us about developing their own house lists. If you're the author of the book you're writing or if you're working with authors, that author should have a following. If the author doesn't currently have a following, then one should be cultivated. You know, you have to be able to have this list of people that you can reach out to. That's certainly one thing. There are a lot of reader communities. A lot of this stuff is, again, online, findable online. You can look for book clubs. You can look for girls interested in sci-fi. It depends, but you'll have a niche and there'll be a community of people that are interested in that. And you have to be really bullish about digging in there and being part of that community. You know, I always say that it can't be always about pushing and promoting. It also has to be about like pulling and loving other people's work as well. So the more you kind of can promote work that's similar to the work that you're writing or publishing, that's good work too. Yeah, I think it's just really about being in the community a lot more, out with the readers.
Not just, I suppose, the community of readers, but also the community of other publishers. And that's where IBPA comes in, because it is a huge community where people really do support each other. I know that I've found that to be the case from my own experience. And I've been a member of IBPA and PMA, which the organization was before that, for, I don't know, maybe close to 30 years, possibly. possibly, been tremendous. What are some of the things that IBPA has coming up on a yearly basis? I think this podcast is going to be archived, so not so much talking about what's happening in the next week or so, but generally, what are some events that IBPA participates in that publishers can look forward to?
It's right that our program kind of recycles itself every year. There's always new things to talk about, but it seems like we typically can run through the same cycle. Well, we always have our publishing university in April, and in terms of networking and getting together with folks who are publishing, that's the place I say you should go. We hold it in different cities across the country every year. This year, it's going to be in Austin, Texas this April. It's a three-day conference. It is an investment of time and energy, lots of energy, but it's a great place to come and meet fellow publishers. Also, every year, you know, we try to get our members' books into the trade magazines and out into the space where they can be seen and understood and loved. So we run programs with Publishers Weekly and Forward Reviews and Library Journal. We run them every year. We have cooperative advertising programs for members. We go to trade shows every year. We go to Frankfurt Book Fair, the ALA Annual Conference every year to try and again gain exposure for our members' books. So there's good opportunities to plug in there. And ongoing webinars happen on the internet. We have discussion forums on the internet. So if you ever wanted to, you know, just you're sitting at your desk at midnight and you have a question and you want to kind of see if there's some resources already available online, hopefully we do have it. I mean, we've archived, like you said, going back 30 years, a lot of content. We've got that information on our website.
And let's not forget the Inside Independent Publishing podcast, which is just starting up, right? Well, thank you very much, Angela Bowl. I was going to give the plug, but I'll let you do it. Where should people go to find out more about IBPA?
Online, I would say. It's at IBPA-online.org.
And Twitter handle is at IBPA. So by all means, check it out. And remember, you do not have to be a publisher. You can be someone who's interested in publishing. You can be a wannabe publisher. You can be someone who works with publishers, wants to understand the industry a little bit better. IBPA, it's a very loving organization. You're going to find a lot of support there and a lot of knowledge, thanks to wonderful staff and especially thanks to Angela Bowl, the Chief Executive Officer. So thank you very much for being with us today, Angela.
Thank you, Peter. It's been great.
Okay, I hope listening to Angela gives you a good sense of how the publishing industry is changing today. We all need friends, I suppose, and indie publishers were battered, often rejected, but we soldier on and we still believe in the ideal that books and ideas can make a difference. We can really benefit from a community that will support, educate, and demand the best from each other. That's IBPA. And if you're already a member, we appreciate your support and be sure to let us hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about IBPA or are considering joining, check out the IBPA website at ibpa-online.org. Thanks so much for listening to Inside Independent Publishing. Keep your nose in that book. And as my boss in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun.